Welcome to the Theology of the Buddy, a podcast for Catholics who love the beauty of the Church's sacred tradition. My name is Brooke. If you're looking to grow in the faith in new ways, looking to connect with other faithful Catholics who are committed to helping you grow closer to our Blessed Lord, or you're simply looking for other Catholic voices who are willing to speak the truth without compromise and who like to have fun in the process, you've come to the right place. We're not experts, but we've learned a lot over the 15 plus years we've been friends in the faith, and we really want to share that with you. So if you haven't yet, make sure you hit that subscribe button wherever you are listening to ensure you get a plentitude of Paschal podcasts delivered to you right when they air. Don't forget to drop by theologyofthebuddy.com for all of our show notes and past episodes. While you're at it, don't forget to follow us on social media so you can keep up to date with all of the great content we are sending out.
Good job. You almost said plenitude right.
Did I say it wrong?
Yeah.
Snap. Well, that's just real life for you, isn't it?
It's okay. I think you said plentitude.
Oh.
That was pretty close.
Is plenitude, is the other word a word?
I don't think so.
Oops. So yeah, welcome to today's podcast. Today it's just Mike and myself, and we're going to share something that's a little bit personal, but we hope that maybe it will be used to someone out there.
I'm sure it will.
I hope so. So we're going to be discussing my experience, Mike's experience, our family's experience with anxiety and depression. So I just want to put a disclaimer out there that we are absolutely not experts in this field. Our opinions are our own and should not be substitutes for professional care. If you or a loved one is struggling with anxiety or depression, please consult with your doctor or a licensed therapist and get whatever help you need.
Just to be thorough, I'll also say this is not financial advice.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely not financial advice. So this is 100% just our story, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah. Lessons we've learned along the way, and there may be many more lessons for us to learn.
Yeah. The journey is not over, but it's, I feel like it's definitely at a better place than it was. I briefly shared in episode 6 of Theology of the Buddy. This is way back in, I think it was 2018 or 2019. Just a little bit about what I went through when I had postpartum depression and anxiety back in the day. You know, over time, it kind of changed and fluctuated and life circumstances changed and it was rough, right? Especially when the pandemic hit. Like, I had already not been feeling at my best before, but, like, I think me and millions of other people around the world had a bad time.
Yeah. Right? Especially those dealing with extroverted children during that time was very difficult.
Mm-hmm. It was just a very crazy time in, I think, every single person's life. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd touch base on this topic again because I feel like I'm in a way better state than I've been in many, many years. So I just maybe hope that maybe sharing my story might be a glimmer of hope to maybe other moms or just other people out there.
Yeah, maybe there's another Brooke and Mike out there struggling with a baby at home and not knowing how to deal with the same issues that we dealt with.
Yeah. We're going to be referencing this book a lot, but it's called The Catholic Guide to Depression by Aaron Cariotti.
We should have pre-planned how to pronounce this. This is an obvious one.
Cariotti.
It's Dr.
Yeah.
Cariotti.
And it was really helpful in terms of getting started and reading things from a Catholic perspective with the use of like modern day medicine. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really, really helpful. I'll make sure I link the book in the show notes.
I can't think of another resource that brings together Catholic spiritual practices and modern medical science in a good way where it's holistic and looks at the whole person.
Mm-hmm. That was really helpful. And also explaining things in layman's terms and yeah, I just thought it was overall a really, really helpful book, at least just to kind of get things started. Another episode that I saw online, shout out to Lisa Canning, who did an episode with her husband a little while ago where they shared their story about how their family was affected by mental illness. And it was the husband that had the diagnosis of anxiety and depression. And I found it incredibly helpful as well, just to hear a story from fellow Catholics having a rough time and giving some good, solid advice. It's just nice to know that you're not alone, which I think is just a big part of it, is knowing you're not enduring things by yourself. And yeah, people can get better or can find ways to cope a little bit better.
Especially coming from someone you respect already.
Yeah.
Rick was already a big fan of Lisa Canning.
Yeah. So especially when you come, you share that vulnerable side of you, right?
Okay. So Brooke, I'm going to take on the role of the interviewer now. Okay. So Brooke, let's get started at the beginning, or well, a beginning. When did you know that you needed help?
Basically, when I couldn't go a day without feeling terrible. I was having a hard time doing just about anything and enjoying it. Just like day-to-day stuff was just, I don't know, just felt like garbage. I felt like my relationships, like left, right, and center, were just like strained. And, you know, I was feeling really alone, you know, with the pandemic and stuff. And yeah, and just being a mom with young kids, even before the pandemic, it's sometimes tough. Like, you're trying to manage a house, you're trying to manage school, you're trying to manage cooking dinner. And sometimes you just find it hard to make time for yourself without also going, wow, I'm exhausted. I'm too tired to make time for myself, you know, or I feel too sad to make time for myself. Like, it's the feeling of despair and dread was basically just invasive. Yeah. And during COVID, I basically didn't leave my house for weeks. I would only leave the house to go to mass and occasionally go and get groceries. And anytime I was with crowds of people, I would sweat profusely. I would have like heart palpitations. I would just feel irritable. And being in big groups, you know, even before COVID, that was something that I started noticing back when we had our daughter. So that's several years ago, that as soon as I had my first child, I was just like, I had the hardest time adjusting to being with big groups of people. I couldn't tell you why. Maybe it was just I went from, you know, being kind of a social butterfly to all of a sudden being on my own most of the time during the week. And then going out into really large groups was just really, really overwhelming.
Would you say before you were more of a social butterfly before Evie?
Oh, yeah. Definitely back when I was in, you know, high school, university, I wasn't a partier or anything like that, but I had a busier schedule. Like, I worked two jobs and I was in school all the time and I would see friends like every single weekend. And, you know, I did stuff.
And something changed after maybe that bout of postpartum depression or just the adjustment to a new life circumstance. After that.
Well, and moving too, like after we got married and moving to Kitchener, right? Like that was a change where I had to adjust to a new life, a new relationship really with my husband. So there was lots of changes that happened.
I'm sure most of our listeners can know how that would instantly trigger a clinical depression and everyone having to get used to it.
He's just so phlegmatic, I can't handle it.
You mentioned the feelings of exhaustion, dread, despair. One of the things that always stuck out to me as a marker of this whole mental illness was just the fact that it was so hard for you to enjoy the normal things in life that normally you would take pleasure in. Even just like sitting down to a nice dinner or playing a board game or, you know, just relaxing with a cup of tea even, or going for a walk. It's when your brain is in this state of depression, one of the worst things seems to be that inability to enjoy anything. And it's obvious from the outside, right? I remember always trying to cheer you up. Always trying to get you into things like, let's go for a walk or let's play a game or something. And it always just fell flat, right?
I just didn't want to. I just had, there was no desire there because you were already feeling so dead. Mm-hmm. Like, really, just you just feel kind of dead inside. I laugh, but I laugh looking at it now because I absolutely don't feel dead anymore. So it's okay. You felt down. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it could be the sunniest day outside and you just didn't feel well. I remember watching a video on YouTube, and it was an interview with Will Wheaton or something like that. I don't know why I was watching this video, but I was, because it was just in my feed, and he was sharing about his battle with depression. And he said when he finally got treatment, he basically took a walk with his wife one night, and he stopped and literally said, "Wow, those flowers are so pretty." And he had pleasure in just looking at these flowers in somebody's garden, and he hadn't felt that in so long. And I just remember it was almost like a light bulb flicked off. It's just like, I want to look at the flowers and be happy. Like, why? That sounds great, because it's not just like it goes beyond just feeling better. It goes into actually experiencing something in a deeper way,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I can only imagine he's walking with his wife. He's enjoying the walk with his wife. He's taking in everything that he's looking at, and he's finding beauty in it. He's, you know, and he's acknowledging that at one time I felt bad, but now I can enjoy this, and there's relief in that. And that's what I wanted. Yeah.
It's almost like you're kind of disconnected from reality in a way, right?
100%. And that was one thing that, like, I have been diagnosed with a depression disorder and a social anxiety disorder. Like, I did seek treatment and I got diagnosed with it, and I have managed things fairly well. But yeah, one of the symptoms is like disconnecting from reality, is catastrophizing every single thing, which I did. And I did it mm-hmm. a lot, sadly. And irrational thinking, mm-hmm. which I think poor Mike had to deal with so much. And yeah, that was just how I experienced it. And also being tired all the time and irritable and grumpy. Mm-hmm.
So what, after kind of these realizations, these moments where you kind of grappled with the fact of what was wrong, what were the first steps towards getting help?
Mm-hmm. There are multiple steps, and I'm going to do my best to try and go through the steps in chronological order, but I'll probably do them wrong.
Not that it's like a step-by-step plan, just to be clear.
No.
It's kind of like a chronological history of how you went through it, kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah. So, the first thing I did is I basically hit rock bottom, and like, I was crying all the time. Like, I was just so unstable. And it was not just like every now and again. It was like every day. Anything could just like, I don't like using the word, but trigger me and just like set me off to like this horrible, horrible spiral. And I just could not get out of it. Like, I couldn't do anything about it. I prayed. I tried to preoccupy myself. And I think I got a little bit OCD, kind of, even with things like cleaning. If I didn't clean things, if everything wasn't in order, if I wasn't following a set routine or set schedule, then I felt like everything was out of control. And I didn't like that. So I basically called a therapist, and they were unfortunately not able to take me at the time, but they were able to refer me to someone else who fortunately was Catholic, and I was able to get in touch with her fairly quickly over the phone, because it was during COVID, so we weren't allowed to go and see people. Quote, like,
mm-hmm. That really makes it easy to deal with your depression and get help.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And they accommodated me how they could. And that was over the phone. I think I was talking to this lady bi-weekly or something. Yeah. And that was just, it was really helpful to just talk things through and really get to the root cause of maybe where things started, because it goes all the way back to when I was a kid. And it basically just was never dealt with, was never addressed and was often dismissed. So when I was finally able to kind of put two and two together, it was like, ah, that's why when these things happen, I basically feel like I need to, you know, curl up in a ball and, you know, hide for the rest of my life. And yeah, it all started to click. I was validated for the feelings that I had, and just to stop and learn how to think things through. I thought that was really important. Another thing that did happen that was really sucky was I tried to go see my family doctor to get some help. And unfortunately, that ended really, really badly. I just asked at the very least to get an evaluation to, you know, figure out what was wrong with me. And he was very dismissive and basically said, oh, just give it time, you'll get better, which is very dangerous advice to anyone that, you know, is saying they could be mentally unstable. I'm glad I was aware of how insane that sounded, because that was like a suicidal person and that's the advice they were given. That's really dangerous. Not good advice.
Right. Some people may get better over time, but other people may just continue to get worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want that. So I was really disheartened when my own family doctor kind of dismissed me. And I know that's not everybody's experience. I know there's a lot of good doctors out there. But yeah, I was genuinely trying to get my life together again and do due diligence to make sure that I was dotting my I's and crossing my T's and stuff. So I just knew I had to keep going. So, you know, eventually I did come back to him a couple months later and I said, I want an evaluation. I need to make sure that I know what's going on with my brain. And, you know, maybe he had a bad day the last time and he flipped the switch. He got me a referral and said, oh, okay, we'll do this. And I got a referral to a psychiatrist, which I only had one appointment, but at least I had some clarification as to what was going on with my brain.
That was where you got the official diagnosis, right?
It confirmed everything I kind of already knew, but right. I didn't want to just assume that was what was wrong with me. I had to make sure that I actually understood what was going on with my brain. I had to know. I couldn't just go through my life thinking, well, I think I have this, when I could have had, you know, I don't know, bipolar disorder or something like that, which I actually at one point in time, I thought that I had because I was so flip-floppy.
Yeah, although that was only a short engagement with that doctor, I think it was an important step to get more information and clarification and confirmation of some of those things.
Yeah. It was, in a sense, a validation for, you know, what I had gone through, where I could actually say, this is what's wrong with me. Now I know what I need to do to take care of it. Mm-hmm. Right? Your leg can hurt for 100 different reasons. And if you just assume it's broken and put a cast on it, you're likely going to hurt yourself more. So if you know what's wrong with you, then you can actually take care of it the way that you need to. And that was just, that was important. I can't remember when I read the Catholic Guide to Depression, but I think it was somewhere before that. So I was already kind of going in with an assumption for what was likely wrong with my brain. Another thing I did was I allowed myself to acknowledge the feelings that I had, where I could like outright say out loud to myself, I feel this. This is why I feel it. Is there anything I can do about it? No, there's nothing I can do about a certain situation. And I needed to just embrace that and learn that I could only control myself and I couldn't control everything outside of myself or in the outside world. So I just had to keep myself in check. And especially when it was like nighttime, I had to learn how to go to bed and say, okay, I felt those things earlier on today. I'm going to take a deep breath and then I'm just going to let it all out. And I'm just going to let those thoughts go for now, because it's not going to help me to constantly think about those things right now. And I know that's easier said than done. And some people need other things to help them let go of that. But by, you know, basically pointing at the problem and saying, not today, tomorrow, I could say, I'll think about that tomorrow. Right now, I'm just going to think about going to sleep, and really forcing myself and training myself to do that.
Was this kind of a fruit of the conversations you had with the therapist?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she had to constantly remind me that it was good and okay to feel the feelings that I had, but there was a time and place for those feelings. And if I let them get in the way of everything else, then, you know, it wasn't good. I had to gain control of those things. I had to take the reins. And that took a lot of practice to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, now if, say, I get stressed about something, I couldn't give you an example. Let's just say there's conflicting schedules or something like that. And I start getting stressed about it. Well, it's like, okay, I feel stressed about it. Let's just keep going. And I acknowledge some things might happen that are out of my control, but I'll cross that bridge when I get there. And that's all I could do. Mm-hmm. Because thinking about it and worrying about it wasn't doing me any good. And it was just making me feel worse. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I want to feel better, right? Yeah. Well, maybe I should just stop thinking about that. I make it sound easy, but it's not. And I know every single person that struggles with anxiety is like, yeah, it's not that easy. And it's not that easy. So it took practice, and I had to willfully push through it. Another thing that I had to do, and this is going to transition over into the next step, was Mike so lovingly bought me a weighted blanket. And that was a game changer for my life. I could go to bed and I constantly felt like this hug was all around me. And it was amazing. And it really helped me to relax at night. Like, because when I looked at my Fitbit, my sleep was basically always disturbed. And I was rolling around a lot because I couldn't fall asleep. I was really, really restless. But as soon as I got this weighted blanket, it was just game changer. All of a sudden, my sleep was just so much better. And sleep has a big effect on how your brain works. So we'll discuss sleep a little bit more later. It ties into the physical health aspect of treating the depression and the anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's not a one and done thing. It's like the treatment of depression and anxiety, I believe, and Dr. Kierity believes, is like multifaceted. It takes multiple things. It's not just one thing. It's the entire person that's dealing with it, with the depression, the mental, emotional, spiritual, physical. It all has to deal with that sickness. Mm-hmm. So one of his recommendations that he talks about was exercise, and exercising like quite a bit. So I'm pulling out some direct quotes from his book here. Quote, for cases of mild to moderate depression, several studies suggest that exercise may work as well as antidepressant medications, having similar physiological effects to antidepressants. For example, exercise lowers levels of the stress hormones cortisol and norepinephrine, reduces platelet aggregation, and promotes the release of endorphins, the body's chemical response for the so-called runner's high. Most studies suggest that exercise must be sufficiently rigorous to be affected. Recommended regimens of aerobic exercise are 20 to 35 minutes 5 times per week or 45 minutes 3 times per week, and both routines are equivalent in terms of their benefits for depression. End quote. So yeah, I was always someone that was on the treadmill, at least ever since we started owning one, and I just had to incorporate it more into every single day. So I would run 3 days a week and I would walk 2 or 3 days a week. Sometimes I would take a walk outside with the family. Sometimes I would just take an inclined walk. And that was great. But what really, I think, started helping me out more was doing weightlifting.
Mm-hmm. When you replace the walk days with weight days.
Yeah. And Ring Fit on the Switch. When we got the Ring Fit, because I told Mike, I need more exercise in my day. I need something that I can do with the kids around. So I got Ring Fit for the Switch, and it was great.
Surprisingly effective as an actual workout, despite being a game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so now I still run 3 times a week because I really like it. I like the cardio. And now I do weights or just strength training, like 3 times a week usually. So now I'm getting in no less than 4 and usually no more than 6 days of exercise, 30 to 40 minutes depending on the day. And I stick to that routine like nobody's business. Like Mike knows every day I gotta do my exercise because I know it's important to me.
So I wanted to comment on something in regards to the whole advice around exercise and sleep in Dr. Cariotti's book, it kind of hit me as I was reading it that some of it almost sounds a little bit monastic. Not like you have to do something as rigorous as like a Benedictine or something, but how that monastic spirituality and the parts of it that apply even to lay people, like in all the spiritual writers, you'll hear advice to have like a rule of life and to discipline your routine and to sleep enough, but not sleep too much, to go to bed on time, to get up on time, to eat good healthy food and eat enough, but not too much, and to do hard exercise and do hard work regularly, and basically to have the right balance of everything in your life. And it's interesting just how it lines up between what's healthy and good for the body and what's healthy for the spiritual life, mm-hmm. and what's good for, I guess, the health of your emotions and your mind, right?
Yeah. And Mike and I had discussed this too, where as soon as I started prioritizing my exercise and my sleep, that was a bit of a game changer in how I felt the rest of the day. You know, mm-hmm. I was sleeping better, I felt better, and I had control over, I had a good grasp on what I needed to function day to day. So like mm-hmm. for me, it was 6.5 or 7 to 8 or 9 hours of sleep every night. 6.5 on the low end, because that's like my bare minimum. But usually I was able to get 7 hours of sleep, and that was really, really good, because I was coming out of having like 5.5 to 6 hours of sleep before. And I know that's hard, especially with young kids. Sometimes that just can't happen easily. I get that. I had to really adjust my schedule to do what I could to make the most of when I could sleep, right? So, yeah. I've had kids. I know sleep deprivation, and mm-hmm. I think that's a big contributing factor to why women get that postpartum depression, because we're literally going insane because we are not sleeping.
Yeah, it kind of like the loss of all of routines and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's probably a big part of it, eh?
Yeah.
Loss of sleep and normal exercise and routines that are things that keep your mind healthy.
Mm-hmm. I feel so much better. And now Mike and I work out together, which is really good. We've made it like mm-hmm. a couple thing, you know? Like, I'll still do my run by myself, because two people can't run on a treadmill and that would just be kind of weird. But yeah, now we're pushing each other doing like weight training, aka I'm kicking Mike's butt. Mm-hmm. I really like doing strength training now. Like, it's just been great. I love it. And I only have dumbbells. Like, that's it. So I don't have anything crazy in terms of equipment. I literally just have dumbbells and my own body weight. And a 50-pound 4-year-old. And so, people think I'm joking, but I'm not.
Do you want to talk about spiritual side of treatment?
Yeah, definitely can't forget that part. Because throughout the entire process, like, I was praying to get better. And I was praying that I could figure out what was wrong with me and why this was happening. So, the way that I basically tried to go into that more was frequent confession. We tried to make that more of a priority. We prioritized doing the family rosary every single day at lunch hour, because that's the time that worked out best for us. So we had that in our routine. I also started reading my Bible every single night without fail before I went to sleep. So limiting the amount of time that I was on my phone in the bedroom and reading scriptures every night, because to me, it was like always ending the day on like a good note. You know what I mean? Literally the good word before I went to sleep. And that was really, really helpful, because that gave me something to think about when I was going to bed. I was also recommended with my therapist that maybe getting sacrament of the sick was good too, because I felt like at times I was being seriously spiritually attacked. Like, my family was under some kind of spiritual attack, and I thought, I'm okay. let's do this. Let's go and get Sacrament of the Sick for my brain not being well. Like, you often hear about people going, and it's because, like, they're terminally ill or they're going in for a surgery or something like that. So I felt kind of strange asking for it when, you know, it was like depression. But I thought, why not? I need help from the great physician to make me well. I needed that. And even afterwards, after I received the sacrament, it was like there was a bit of a wave of relief. Like, okay, God can see I'm serious about getting better. And if I'm gonna have any kind of suffering in the future, I know that he's gonna be there with me. And it's like I've committed to getting through this with him and enduring it with him however he wants me to. So I think I obtained a lot of grace and a lot of strength from the sacrament, and I hope I used it well.
Yeah, I wanted to mention something quick on the husband side too, that I think daily prayer for me had to be a thing as well, and not that I can go and like claim responsibility for making things better or anything, but it's all part of the spiritual battle. Brooke talked about how she felt like our family was being spiritually attacked. I felt it too. And like my routine had to incorporate daily saying deliverance prayers, daily praying the St. Michael prayer, daily praying to St. Joseph, just as the example of a father and protector of the family, and specifically asking for deliverance from fear and anxiety and depression mm-hmm. in our family.
Coming back to that, like as a husband, your temperament is so different from mine. Refresher, Mike is a predominantly like, 80 to 90% phlegmatic. So for him, it's super easy for him to switch from one thought to another and totally let those feelings go. Like you can be really mad about what somebody said on Twitter, but then I could show up into your office and you're like, oh, I was grumpy about Twitter. Oh, look, you brought me some tea. And then you might forget all about Twitter until you go and look at it again. You'll say grump, 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 and then you'll just move on with your life.
I'm really getting called out on my Twitter habit.
I'm just using it as an example because I don't have Twitter. Yeah. So Mike is able to, you know, stop and think about things really clearly. But as a melancholic, I sometimes do not think that way.
You're able to stop and overthink things really easily.
Oh, yeah. I can overthink things into the ground and into the center of the earth. Just overthink till you can't overthink it anymore. For us as a couple, there was hard times because I'd be like, why don't you understand how I'm feeling? And Mike would be like, the nail is in your head. It's right there.
If you don't know that reference, look up It's Not the Nail on YouTube.
Yeah, I think it's an okay video for people to watch. Yeah, so when you have two temperaments like ours and, you know, one of us is dealing with depression and anxiety, it could get a little frustrating because be like, why don't you understand why I'm sad? Mike would be like, why do you keep overthinking this of things that you don't know about? And looking back, I'm just like, yeah, he was right. Like, there was nothing I could do to change something or whatever. I just had to let go and let God. And I think that's like 99.9% of the struggle. Sometimes you're just like, but I can't let go because this feeling is all that I'm used to, right? Like, sometimes you get so used to feeling sad that you don't know how to feel anything else. So I want to talk about one last part about my healing journey. I'm getting better sleep. I have a routine. I'm exercising. I'm feeling pretty good about, you know, my health. All of that looks great. There was just one. And I've taken care of myself spiritually, right? Like, I have done everything. I've put in the work. I've put in the hours. I've gone to therapy. I've done everything that I could possibly do. There was just one thing missing. My puppy.
Your therapy dog.
My therapy dog. He's not really a therapy dog, but honestly, like, I wanted a dog for years, and honestly, I read so many studies and so many like stories about people that were suffering from depression or other physical or mental illnesses, and they had just massive amounts of success, of helping people with animals, like just having a pet or something other than a kid or a spouse or something to keep you present in a certain way. And I'm not saying that a dog is a child or a dog is at all equal to a human relationship. I'm just saying that there's something special about having a dog friend. Am I crazy? Maybe I'm crazy.
Not anymore. Because of the dog.
But like, I just basically prayed and I was like, God, if you want my family to have a dog, you will line things up and you will make it happen. Sure enough, I said to Mike, like, I really want us to try and go on a trip in the summer. Like, what happens if we can't get a dog because we're going on a trip, blah, blah, blah. Well, lucky for us, the puppies were not going to be ready until after we got back from our trip. And the dogs were also on sale from a breeder that was really, really good and not far away and let us come and look at the dogs. And, you know, it wasn't like some weird, sketchy situation, I don't think. I didn't get that vibe at all from these breeders. It was amazing. I was constantly worried that I wasn't going to be able to handle having a dog. But at the same time, I knew that a dog would get me out of a rut that I had been in for so long. Cause I grew up with a dog. So I knew what it took to have a dog. And then we got Lewis and I cried like a baby as soon as I saw him. And, yeah, when we brought him home, I once again cried like a baby. And that poor breeder probably thought I was insane. And I trained him and it got me out of the house like on a weekly basis. Having the dog gave me and the kids like kind of something to do together. You know, like we take the puppy outside and, you know, we would all pet the puppy and play with the puppy. And yeah, I was just able to get out a little bit more. And when Mike wasn't home, I was able to have like the dog near me to keep me company. So I never had to feel like I was by myself. And also he's just overall been an amazing dog, basically the perfect animal that I could have possibly ever asked for.
Yeah. You got pretty lucky.
It was just amazing. And, it was just really helpful to have a puppy. Like I really, really, and I put in a lot of work to take care of our doggy.
One thing I see with the dog influence is that it's kind of an interrupter of the bad habit of overthinking or negative spiraling on things that can go with depression, where, you know, you get worried about something or you get upset about something, but then, you know, the dog needs your attention and you go pet the dog and that makes you happy and you move on from the thing instead of obsessing about the thing.
Yeah. It's a different kind of interruption than say, oh no, the kid is calling me again because they spilled their water, or the kid is calling me again because, like, I don't know, someone's on the toilet and needs my help on the toilet or something like that. It's like, oh, the dog came over and he's wagging his tail and he has a ball. Yeah. Or, you know, he wants to be petted, or, you know, he's sitting at my feet. Like, you have just something else that disrupts that routine of your day. And maybe it's because of that disruption, like your brain gets more used to not having the sad part of your brain on all the time because it's been interrupted so many times. So it's almost like that connection kind of weakens a little bit and it's less likely to be active all the time or overactive all the time.
Yeah.
So that's just my thoughts. I have no idea if that's true, but...
Yeah. I'm not a doctor, but that's what it looks like to me. It looks like it's just a consistent positive influence that stops you from getting too much wrapped up in stuff like that.
Well, think about it this way. Like, let's just say, you know, someone is depressed or something like that, and they are told, okay, every time you start feeling depressed, I want you to take care of flowers. Like, I want you to plant some seeds, or I want you to water your garden. Something along those lines, right? It forces you doing something that you have no option but to enjoy. Like, if your thing is plants and that's your thing and you enjoy it, then you're going to just, every time you feel upset about something, you're going to go water your plants. And then before you know it, you're taking care of your plants all the time and you don't really have the time to feel sad. Like, I don't know if that's true or not, but it's a forcing yourself to disrupt that cycle and doing something different does make a massive difference. Mike, how do you think things are now? Now that I've talked your ear off for an hour.
Don't worry, I'm used to it.
Hey.
yeah, it's been a massive difference, and just seem a lot more healthy and happy, and thank God for that.
Mm-hmm. I feel so much better. And for me, I didn't need to take any medications. I wanted to challenge things head on to see if I could take things from, I don't know if holistic is the right word.
No, holistic would mean like integrating the whole body and soul and mind, like according to the whole. That's holistic.
Oh.
So like avoiding medication is something else. Like,
you're right, right. I wanted to see if I could take care of things before I had to use medication. It wasn't out of the realm of possibility for me, but I needed to try those other options first.
Yeah,
and not, see if they would work.
It's not like there was something intrinsically wrong with taking the medication.
No.
It was just we wanted to explore the other options first, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 'Cause it was, I knew that I had to at the very least try. And it didn't take long before I started really seeing the results of my efforts too. That for me was just what worked for me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
See, I feel better. I sleep better. I think I look better. I don't know.
Unless it's the bad haircut, which is gone now.
The bad haircut's gone now. I have a good haircut now, which is good. It's shorter, but that's okay. And I can manage my stress levels in better ways. Am I still a fan of big, massive gatherings? Not really, but it's not because I'm paranoid about COVID or anything. It's just, I prefer the more intimate get-togethers, like the quieter groups. I just like them more. And I think that's an okay thing. I had to embrace that, where it wasn't that I was paranoid about being with lots of people. I just can't handle them very well. I like things to be quieter. And that's okay. That's in my personality. And that's in who I am as a person. And I embrace that. And that's okay. Do I listen to metal music when no one's around? Absolutely, I do. Absolutely. But does that mean that I want to go to, you know, a metal show with like, you know, mosh pits and stuff? No, absolutely not. I don't want that. I'll watch from like far away. And that's okay. I also don't want to break any bones.
I'll go to the metal shows for you.
And you will love it because you're just phlegmatic enough to say this is fine.
I'll love it as much as a phlegmatic can love anything.
Yeah. So that's my story. Again, we're not experts in this field, but I really hope that maybe there is something of value there that could help somebody else. And I sure am happy to be and be where I am and, you know, have the people in my life supporting me. Oh, another thing. Can I mention the comic really quickly?
Yeah.
Okay. So during my therapy sessions, shout out to NF for
his, I knew you were going to shout out NF.
His album seriously helped me so much. Anyway, I had to like do drawings to try and express things that I felt. And, you know, I started thinking about it more and more that I wanted to do something with my art. And originally I had wanted to do, and still do, want to do a comic about the life of Saint Sebastian. And I just know this is a really historical type comic I would be writing. And I didn't think that I had what it took. So I wanted to practice. And I thought, what if I try and write a story about how I've dealt with this anxiety and depression? Yeah, I decided to make a comic book about, you know, a fictional person with fictional people and whatnot, and in her struggle and some things I could relate to. And yeah, it's kind of been cathartic because I could like give form to some of those feelings that I had and things that I went through.
Yeah. And you managed to sneak in a whole bunch of NF reference with like the mansion and stuff.
Where was the mansion?
Her room.
Her mind, the mind like room. Yeah.
Kind of like a similar
concept. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of Catholic stuff too, because like I don't think I could have gone through getting better without being rooted in my faith. You know what I mean? It gave me so much hope that I could get better because, like, I felt like I had, like, a whole bunch of cheerleaders. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, like, when I was running on the treadmill, I would think about, like, St. Joan of Arc running into battle. I had my own battle, and my battle was getting over what was wrong with my head. You know, stuff like that. It sounds really kind of stupid, but I had an out, and I felt like, I felt like there were people cheering me on, and that was great. And I still do have people cheering me on, and I think that's great. And I'm cheering all of you on.
Well, Theology of the Buddy fans, thanks for sticking with us for this episode. And there's only one thing left to say on the topic.
Stay tratty. Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast. What are your thoughts on today's episode? We would love to hear from you guys. Message us on Facebook or DM us on Instagram at Theology of the Buddy. Find us on Twitter at Stay Tratty or email us at theologyofthebuddy.com. You can also send us a voicemail via Facebook Messenger. If you like what you heard today, please consider subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, YouTube, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to great podcasts. Would you also please consider rating and reviewing us on iTunes? We'd greatly appreciate it as it helps us to get noticed within the larger podcast community. Also, make sure you're subscribed so you can listen as soon as the next episode is out. We'll save you a seat at the table. New episodes released every other Monday. All right, guys, we'll see you then. Take care. Bye-bye.